You're listening to a Radio 191 FM podcast.
You're tuned in to the R1 News, your stop for news and current affairs on the airwaves. 11 to 12 weekdays here on Radio 191 FM. Te reo irirangi kotahi.
Tēnā koutou I tēnei ata. Kei te whakaronga mai koe ki te reo irirangi kotahi. Kua Miria Takuingua, and you're listening to the R1 News Show for Rātou, Tuesday, the 12th of July. No nāianei on the program, we'll be speaking with Kurt Krause, Professor of Biochemistry at the University of Otago, about monkeypox following the confirmation of New Zealand's first case of the virus this weekend. Duncanson, Senior Lecturer with the Department of Women's Health at the University of Otago, about a new study into the significant food insecurity in low-income female sole parent families in Aotearoa and what can be done to support those households. And finally, I'll be chatting with Mandy Mayhem-Bullock from Keep New Zealand Beautiful about this year's Cleanup Week. But first, we'll have Dave Borry to read the news headlines and weather. And in the meantime, here's a song. This is Big Wow by Nick and Ruben. You're listening to R1 News here on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. Stay tuned. That was Nick and Ruben with Big Wow, and now for headlines.
The R1 News headlines.
National Party leader Christopher Luxon says the rest of the world has moved on from COVID-19 and that Aotearoa needs to do the same. Luxon, who has just returned from an overseas tour which included visits to the UK, Ireland and Singapore, says the traffic light system currently in place is too complex and should be abandoned. He also called for the test-to-work regime to be expanded to a wider range of workers. Luxon's proclamation comes as COVID-19 cases and hospitalisations creep up in Aotearoa, with a second wave expected in the coming months. Britain is to have a new Prime Minister by September 5th. Rules around the Conservative Party election process have now been finalised, with contenders needing 20 backers within the party to run for the leadership position and 30 to get past the first round of voting. Former Chancellor Rishi Sunak has secured close to 40 MP in his support, leading the competition. Current Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced his resignation as Conservative Party leader and Prime Minister last Friday after 59 of his MPs resigned in protest of his leadership. Johnson's tenure as Prime Minister has been marred with the cost of living crisis, the COVID-19 pandemic and his own failure to follow COVID-19 restrictions, amongst other issues. The Otago Regional Council appears to be readying to announce a reduced bus timetable for the next month, if not longer. COVID-19 has resulted in significant staff shortages to the bus systems in Dunedin and Queenstown, with buses routinely arriving late, if at all, causing headaches and disruption for passengers. Bus users are advised to keep an eye on the Orbis, Dunedin and Queenstown Facebook pages to see any announcements regarding the bus timetables today. And those were the headlines on the R1 News. Now, ke te pihe te ahua o te rangi. How's the weather?
The R1 News weather.
Today and tomorrow, Otipoti can expect heavy rain with snow to 500 metres. A high of iwa, 9, and a low of fitu, 7, is predicted for both days. Expect strong southerlies tomorrow. A heavy rain watch is in place from 1pm today until 10am tomorrow. Stay safe.
That was the R1 News headlines. Catch up at r1.co.nz/news or find us at Radio 1 91 FM on Twitter or R1 News NZ on Instagram and tune in to R1 News at 11am on weekdays.
Kia ora for those headlines, Dave. Soon we'll be joined by Kurt Kraus to talk about the first case of monkeypox in New Zealand. It is currently 12 minutes past 11 and you're listening to Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. Stay tuned.
Expected living.
That was Fever by Aldous Harding, and it is currently 16 minutes past 11 here on R1 News. Today, New Zealand is now one of the 50 countries reporting cases of monkeypox. A person in their 30s who has recently returned from overseas to Auckland is confirmed to have the virus. Monkeypox is a viral zoonotic disease, meaning it can pass between animals to humans, and those infected experience flu-like symptoms as well as a characteristic rash, which tends to appear after a few days. I am now joined by Kurt Kraus, Professor of Biochemistry at the University of Otago, to hear more about monkeypox and what this case means for New Zealand. Kia ora, Kurt.
Kia ora. Thanks so much for asking me to join you.
Thank you. So what should New Zealanders be aware of now that monkeypox is confirmed to be in the country?
Well, we were expecting it for sure. The overseas outbreak continues to grow. There's about 6,000 cases now. As you mentioned, it's over 50 countries, and it's predominantly located in Europe. And Australia already has cases. I guess they have over 20 cases now, so it was just a matter of time before the cases came to New Zealand. Maybe it would be a good thing to sort of go over how people get monkeypox, and if you get it, what happens. How would that go?
Yeah, so what are some of the symptoms and common characteristics of monkeypox?
Well, usually what happens is, it's a pox virus disease, as you mentioned, so it's viral in origin, and you usually get it by touching a lesion that somebody has. They have a pox lesion on their hands or other parts of their body. You touch it, and you get contact with the virus, and then the virus then burrows in and infects you. The other ways that you can get it are if you have contact with the bedding or utensils of somebody who's got monkeypox, or if you're exposed to their respiratory secretions. So it's distinct from coronavirus in that it's not nearly as contagious as coronavirus. It usually requires direct contact, or you have to be quite close to somebody. So it's not usually transmitted by aerosols, for example, whereas coronavirus can be transmitted by aerosols. All right, so if you end up getting exposed, then what happens usually is there's an incubation period that's variable of sort of 1 to 2 weeks. And then after that incubation period, then people get sick and they get a high fever. They get sort of backaches. They get swollen lymph nodes. And they seriously feel pretty bad, like they have a really bad kind of flu. And then after that all resolves, then they break out of these pox lesions. And the lesions sometimes will start out on the face, and then they'll spread throughout sort of hands and feet and legs. And it can be quite remarkable. And so a lot of people who have a bad case of monkeypox can have lots and lots of pox lesions. Then they generally will isolate. And then after 2 to 3 weeks, those lesions will dry up. And then they're no longer contagious, and they'll recover completely in general. So that's the usual course.
Mm-hmm. Given it's something similar-esque to chickenpox, what is the likelihood of children catching and spreading monkeypox in New Zealand?
Yeah, so far of the 6,000 cases, that there's 3 that have been reported in children. So kids can get it, anybody can get it, but they have to have direct contact. So it hasn't been much of a problem now. In fact, 99% of the cases up to now have been men. And so it hasn't, it's been in a very set population presently. But everybody's susceptible to monkeypox, so that's an important thing to keep in mind.
What risks does monkeypox pose for more vulnerable groups in the community?
Well, that's a good point. The more vulnerable you are, the more serious infection you could get. And there are some people who can get quite serious infections. There's different strains of monkeypox that are around. Some strains, there's 2 main strains in Central Africa. The Central African strain has a mortality that's as high as 10%, which is pretty significant. There's a Western African strain that mortality is much lower. It's about 1%. And the strain that's currently circulating looks to be related to that strain. Although, interestingly, there has not been any mortality outside of Africa so far in this rather large outbreak. There have been cases in Africa where people have died, but not outside of Africa. That's notable. And one thing that's happened is we've sequenced the genome of the current monkeypox strain, and it's significantly different from previous strains. There's been about 50 changes between the current strain and the strain that was spreading in 2018. And that surprised us. We were expecting about sort of four or five differences.
As you mentioned, and the Ministry of Health has stated, this case wasn't unexpected as monkeypox has been spreading internationally. Should we be expecting any sort of notable outbreak in Aotearoa?
I hope not. I think we should. We could see more cases for sure. There are two things that have occurred with this European outbreak that I think has led to it persisting longer than we might have expected. One of them is, for a bunch of people who are picking up monkeypox, they're actually not getting very sick. They're not all of them are getting the classic fever, swollen glands, feel really bad prior to the outbreak. In fact, they don't even know they're sick. So that's one reason that it's spreading. The other reason is some people don't have very many lesions at all. They might have one or two lesions. And even more confounding, if some people have a couple of lesions on their hands or feet that just don't look like much of anything. They look like maybe a pimple or something, so you could mistake it for nothing. And I think that's one problem, is that there are people who don't realize they have been exposed and don't know that they're sick who actually have monkeypox. And for that reason, there's a feeling that there might be asymptomatic transmission that's occurring, and there might be sort of under the radar more cases than we know about. So some people are expecting okay, if there's one case in New Zealand, are there actually other cases that people aren't aware of?
Given that, what should people be looking out for, and how can they tell the difference between COVID symptoms and monkeypox symptoms?
I think if you have exposure to somebody who has monkeypox, or if you're in a situation where you think you might have been exposed to monkeypox, you have to have a high index of suspicion and sort of be watching and looking to see, are there any lesions that have arisen? So people should be really, you know, mindful of that. And if you have a funny looking lesion or something that you're concerned about, you call the health line or your GP's office. I think you'd be cautious. You wouldn't want to, you know, sort of go down to the GP's office and say, hey, I've got monkeypox. You'd want to call ahead so that they could prepare. But people need to be careful. And if you have a new lesion and you're worried it could be monkeypox, then you want to isolate yourself from other people while that's getting confirmed. Now, there's tests that, you know, there's a PCR test and there's a sequencing test, and there's several different ways that monkeypox could be diagnosed. So within New Zealand, we can diagnose it. There's plans in place to isolate and contact trace if you end up being exposed. So it'll be important for people to really, really be aware. Now, in terms of what's going on in the community, you know, there are thousands of cases every day of coronavirus. So, you know, we're averaging in the sort of 10,000 range, and probably we have at least two times that many cases, and there is one case of monkeypox. So if you have COVID-like symptoms, it's going to be 99.99% of the time, it's going to be something like COVID. It's not going to be monkeypox. So in order for us to follow this, we just have to be really careful about, I guess, skin lesions and contact with other people who might have been exposed to monkeypox.
Thanks so much for coming on today.
Pleasure.
That was Kurt Krause, Professor of Biochemistry at the University of Otago, talking about the monkeypox in New Zealand and across the world. Up next, I'll be chatting with Dr. Mavis Duncanson about a new study from the University of Otago which illustrates the significant food insecurity in low-income female sole parent households. But up first, here's a song. This is My Mum Is Proud of Me by Carnivorous Plant Society. It is 25 minutes past 11. Stay tuned. That was Carnivorous Plant Society with My Mum Is Proud of Me, before which we were speaking with Dr. Kurt Krauss, Professor of Biochemistry at the University of Otago, about monkeypox in Aotearoa. It is currently 30 minutes past 11. A new study by the Department of Women's and Children's Health here at the University of Otago outlines the struggles and experiences of low-income solo mums to provide food for their families. Previous research has shown that 19% of New Zealand children are living in households which experience severe to moderate food security. This study, published in Journal of the Royal Society of New Zealand, explores the reality of women skipping meals, neglecting their personal health, and the stress they experience to feed their families. We are now joined by Dr. Mavis Duncanson, Senior Lecturer with the Department of Women's Health at the University of Otago, to tell us more about this issue and what can be done to support households experiencing food insecurity. Kia ora.
Kia ora. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
So, food insecurity is described as limited and uncertain access to sufficient nutritious food, and it has damaging effects on health and well-being. This research was focused around the day-to-day reality of single-parent households in New Zealand struggling with food security. What were some of the significant findings?
The significant findings were, first of all, actually to hear those voices of lived experience. I think that was part of the motivation for undertaking the project. And I want to emphasize that this was a student project. So Dr. Grace McCauley, when she was still a medical student, undertook this work as a summer project. And as she looked through the literature, she realized that there were some, but there were really not a lot of accounts of that day-to-day experience of women. So she chose to interview women who were parenting alone and who had used charitable sources to get to feed their family. So some of the key findings, well, I think the key finding actually was that the single underlying issue was a lack of adequate income. So that households, particularly households who were eligible for and receiving financial assistance from the government, did not have enough money to allow their children to thrive and to have all of the health and education and other benefits that you would want for them to have. Some of the other themes that came forward were actually looking at the ways that these households did manage to cope and also looking at some of the negative effects of food insecurity, both for the parents and for the children.
So what are some of these negative effects and also the long-term implications for families which are or have experienced extreme food insecurity?
So some of those negative effects These women were all mothers, obviously. So the women often went without themselves, so they would miss meals and they would neglect their own health in order to make sure that their children had something to eat. And they talked about missing doctor's appointments, about not being able to afford personal hygiene products for themselves, which then meant that they had to restrict their own activities. They were often tired and feeling run down and exhausted. I think underpinning all of that was the actual day-to-day stress and anxiety associated with wondering how they would be able to make ends meet and how they could actually balance all of the stresses upon them. And we know that for children growing up in an environment of stress and anxiety, that's a very toxic environment and affects children's outcomes in terms of their development, their ability to participate in education. The women themselves said they worried about their children's exposure to financial and emotional stress from such a very young age. When they should be carefree, they were very aware that their mothers were anxious and stressed about providing for them.
How is food insecurity developing and changing with the current cost of living conditions in Aotearoa?
And that's the unanswerable question right at the moment, because all of our sort of mechanisms for measuring this are through administrative surveys, and obviously they take time to process. So the most recent New Zealand Health Survey was to the middle of last year. Hopefully the 2021-22 results will be out soon. So we don't have these kind of consistent measurements about what's happening. We've certainly, all of us, heard about the increased cost of living that's occurring. And while that's obviously affecting every household, we're all having to tighten our belts a bit and be a bit more careful about our budgeting. What we haven't seen is the effect on households that were already struggling to have the basics. So in terms of actual data, we are obviously still needing to see what comes forward in the most recent surveys, but certainly looking at the anecdotal reports from social service agencies, the requirements for people, or the need for people to actually seek assistance, does seem to be increasing.
What does the prevalence of food insecurity mean for the wider community?
That's a very good question. When we sat down as a research team to think about this, I think there was a comment from one of the women, or some of the women, wondering how it is that in a country like New Zealand, they could have such an enduring struggle to have the basics for themselves and their children. And it does seemed to us that one of the key issues was that we seemed to, as a society, tolerate this degree of inequity, of having households with such extreme hardship. And I think there is a need. It's one thing to describe the experience, and I think it's really fantastic that Grace has done this. And there have obviously been other studies in New Zealand that have looked at similar questions and describing the experience. But what we really need to understand is that what is it that is blocking us? What is it that is stopping us from taking the kind of action as a society that would actually mean that every child enjoys great food, that every child, every household is able to, I think in your words right at the start, to have enough food, to have food that's delicious and nutritious, and that the household has got the resources to get that food in a way that maintains dignity and self-respect.
So what needs to be done to support households experiencing food insecurity in New Zealand right now?
I said earlier that the main underlying cause was a lack of income, and I know that the government has made significant changes and increases to lowest incomes, but these have not actually been sufficient to meet the needs of those households. So having adequate income, whether that's from employment or whether that's from government assistance, is really important. Looking at what we can do as a society for our whole food chain to make sure that food is affordable. We're an agricultural nation, and it seems really troubling that we have on the one side severe hunger, and on the other, and food insecurity, and on the other side we have food waste. So somehow finding some balance between those two. And I think the key issue seems to be to break this generational cycle so that we bring into place policies that ensure that every household has what they need to thrive.
Thanks so much for coming on and talking with me.
It's a great pleasure, and just reiterating, this was a student project and great scope for students to investigate an issue in their communities and to then have this coming forward into the public domain.
That was Dr. Mavis Duncanson talking about a new study which has illustrated the significant food insecurity in low-income female sole parent families in New Zealand. It is currently 20 minutes to 12, and soon we'll be talking with a spokesperson from Keep New Zealand Beautiful about their annual cleanup week later this year. But first, here's a song. This is Nice Weather for Ducks by Lemon Jelly. You're listening to R1 News on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. Stay tuned.
All the ducks are swimming in the water. Falderalderalder, falderalderalder. All the ducks are swimming in the water. Falderalderalder, falderalderalder. All the ducks are swimming in the water. Falderalderalder, falderalderalder.
ducks are swimming in the water. Alder, 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 alder. All the ducks are swimming in the water. Alder, 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 alder. All the ducks are swimming in the water. Alder, 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 alder.
That was Nice Weather for Ducks by Lemon Jelly. It is currently 14 minutes to 12. You're listening to R1 News here on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. Keep New Zealand Beautiful has announced the return of its annual clean-up week, New Zealand's largest movement against litter, taking place from the 17th of September to the 23rd of September this year. Last year, over 30,000 volunteers took part in the event, collecting approximately 300 tons of litter over the course of the week. To tell us more about the event, we are now joined by Deputy Chairperson and Zone 5 representative of Keep New Zealand Beautiful, Mandy Mayhem-Bullock. Kia ora.
Morena, thanks so much for having me on the show. How are you today?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Great. So, I'm out at Waitati and the rain is beating on the window panes. It is nice weather for ducks.
Yeah, indeed. It's pretty wet down here in Aotearoa as well. Cleanup Week is an annual event run by Keep New Zealand Beautiful. Can you tell us a bit about how this initiative began and what it's all about?
Well, Keep New Zealand Beautiful, of course, our logo is Be a Tidy Kiwi, and we've been carrying out picking up litter initiatives for many, many years. This year's Clean Up Week is on World Clean Up Day, synchronising with the globe, Saturday the 17th of September. our message, I guess, is that we have free cleanup kits available on request. You just need to register online, www.knzb.org.nz, to find out more and register. That means you'll get gloves and rubbish bags, and this is available to individuals and family, not-for-profit members that might not have access to their own clean-up materials. Of course, schools, youth groups, the Keep New Zealand Beautiful community, our educational branches, early childhood centres. We work a lot with the University of Otago. I'm the chairperson for Dunedin, Keep Dunedin Beautiful. And I've already had great interest from the Valley Project, who are going to be running their September clean-up.
So Clean-up Week sounds like a really diverse event. Can you tell us more about how it works?
Right. Well, it's over that week period, so you know, maybe if it was a yucky day, you could reschedule your clean up. Some groups opt to clean up the beach or their own backyard. I know here in my area, the play centre children, they just walk along the footpath along the main street and fill bags of litter. We also have a new exciting citizen science program that we're intertwining into Clean Up Week. It's Upstream Battle and Backyard Battle. So we're really interested in data collection and analysis. This program's a great way to get involved and collaborate and contribute to the solution. We analyse all of the rubbish and we keep stats and, of course, recycle every little bitty bit of plastic if we can.
Do people need kind of some background to get involved with that citizen science program?
No, not at all. An individual can do it on their own. One of our youngest POD Award recipients here in Dunedin was a young girl, Georgia, that ran ongoing beach cleanups in the Waikawaiti area, and then sewed reusable shopping bags and distributed them at the local store just with her buddy and pretty much off her own back. We've got our awards for Dunedin coming up in August. If there's any individuals or groups or schools out there that you could think of that have been doing amazing mahi, coming to mind, of course, is the recent storm surge clean-up on Portsmouth Drive. And with the way the weather is right now, I expect quite a bit of plastic and rubbish is going to get blasted around the city, so there's an opportunity post-storm that we could all get out and just do our little bit to be tidy Kiwis.
Yeah, and last year's cleanup week, an equivalent of, I think, 2,600 rugby fields of litter was collected. What kind of turnout are you expecting?
300 tonnes.
Yeah. What kind of turnout are you expecting for this year's event? And how significant is an annual event like this to clean up the Motu?
We only had 30,000 volunteers last year, probably because of COVID. But in 2020, there was closer to 60,000 volunteers getting stuck in. So now that we've lifted some of our restrictions around outdoor spaces, there's no reason for every person able-bodied to get out and about and do their bit.
And what kind of impact does a big cleanup like this have?
I think it's about ownership, community pride, a sense of belonging, and of course we're role modelling, aren't we, to our children and to the rest of the citizens of our beautiful city how to behave.
So my last question is, do you have any tips for those to get out there and get involved with Cleanup Week this year?
Well, you can be involved at the university. We usually engage with the halls of residence to run a cleanup. That includes picking people up in buses and taking them out to the beaches. And if you just go onto the website, Keep New Zealand Beautiful, you just have to click your way through to register and get sent out a clean-up pack, even if you just decided to beautify your street.
Awesome. Thanks so much for coming on and talking with me today.
Have a beautiful day. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, you too.
Keep warm and safe and dry.
That was Mandy Mahan-Bullock from Keep New Zealand Beautiful talking about their annual cleanup, which is happening from the 17th of September to the 23rd of September in 2022. It is 11:52 a.m. You're listening to R1 News here on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. This is Ode to Be a Rainbow by Soko.
Smile.
That was Ode to Be a Rainbow by Soko, and this has been the R1 News Show for Rato Tuesday, the 12th of July. Today on the program, we spoke with Kurt Kraus, Professor of Biochemistry at the University of Otago, about monkeypox after the first case had been confirmed in Tamaki Makaurau over the weekend. We heard from Dr. Mavis Duncanson, Senior Lecturer with the Department of Women's Health at the University of Otago, about a study which has illustrated the significant food insecurity in low-income sole parent families in Aotearoa. And we were also just speaking with Mandy Mayhem Bullock from Keep New Zealand Beautiful about their annual cleanup week, an event happening in September this year. And if you'd like to, you can tune into R1 News weekdays from 11 to 12 here on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. Thanks for listening and enjoy the rest of your Tuesday.
You've been tuned in to the R1 News, weekdays from 11 to 12 here on Radio 1 91 FM, Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. Catch up at r1.co.nz/news or find us at Radio 1 91 FM on Twitter or R1 News NZ on Instagram. Yeah.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.